Welcome to Help and Hope, a podcast of CCEF.
Thanks for joining us again this week on Help and Hope. My name is Andrew Ray, and I'm joined by
David Pollison.
Kevin DeYoung.
Kevin DeYoung, and thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, great to be here.
You come from, you're pastor of a church in East Lansing called
University Reformed Church, right across the street from Michigan State University. So we have campus ministry is a big part of what we do. We also have lots of families. It's a medium-sized church. I've been there for a little over 7 years.
Mm-hmm. So did you start the church?
No, the church was started back in the late 60s.
Okay.
As a church plant, and the pastor served there for 36 years, so I'm the second pastor. He was there for a long time,
and laid
a really good foundation, and now many of the men that he led to Christ or discipled there are now 50s, 60s, are my elders, and it's just a wonderful congregation.
Hmm. You mentioned you have five children.
I do have five. So does my wife.
And you have a 2-month-old. So congratulations.
Yes,
there.
Yes, thank you.
Very exciting. How do you have time for being a pastor with five children?
I have a very good wife.
Yes.
Our kids are 8, 6, 4, 2, and 2 months. So we are just down on the stair steps. In fact, my wife said the other day, if we have another one, do you think we could wait 3 years? we sure can. I'm always wrestling with my time.
Yeah,
and that's just something that I sometimes get right and sometimes I don't, mm-hmm. honestly.
Yep.
And with church ministry and some things outside of the local church.
Yeah.
But when I'm home, I really try hard to be home.
Yeah.
So I'm outside, I'm throwing football with my 8-year-old, and I'm on the ground with our little toddler and doing whatever I can to be a dad and have fun. And then my wife is very gracious to support me and really, further the ministry in this way by doing such a good job with our brood.
That's wonderful.
Kevin, can I ask you to comment on the place counseling plays within your ministry, both you individually as a pastor who has many other duties, as well as your church?
That's a really good question. Of course, a lot of it has to do with, our definition of counseling. If people just think counseling is always very formal or sort of a clinical setting, that's one thing. But if you think of counseling as really ministering the word to help hurting people and help people change, then really that's what the ministry of the word is all about. Mm. So for me personally, I hope that it comes out a lot in my preaching. We have a biblical counselor on staff. I'll say more about that in a second. But he'll often come up and he'll say, oh, thank you. That's just the point I was trying to make in counseling. And I'll say, thank you for making that point in counseling, because that's what I'm trying to do in preaching. So hopefully, preaching is – it's authoritative. It's proclamation. But it's a form of counseling too. Personal counseling, I do some of that. But honestly, I don't do a lot of it. And we
accept the informal, the sense of every conversation.
Yes, and
if you take a genuine interest in a person,
exactly,
you find out what their heartaches are,
right,
and what their struggles are.
I'm always, there's a couple of guys or something that I'm discipling or college students that I'm meeting with, so there's counseling in that sense. In our church, it's been really exciting to see in the past few years, we've really made a concerted effort, the elders have and the staff, to really make biblical counseling more of an integrated part of what we do. So one summer, we encourage as many people as possible on Wednesday evenings to go through the Changing Hearts, Changing Lives curriculum and videos, which we had maybe 80 to 100 people come out and do that. And then have just started working toward, we have small group training. And whenever they meet, we try to – are incorporating these ideas from really CCF, not to give a free commercial, but that's what we're doing. And with
that's
our
fine.
Yeah,
free.
Free commercials are fine. And with our elders too. So these resources have been so helpful because we want to see not just, well, the pastor does that, but everyone who's doing Life on Life ministry can benefit from this. And then what's been really exciting is we added a couple years ago a part-time staff person to work with biblical counseling. And just this past fall, he's come on full-time. And so he has a caseload that he does some counseling. which is a big help. And then he's really a champion and a trainer. So he's training up people so they have the skills to do more of this counseling in our church. So I'm really thankful for the direction we've been headed.
What are some of the problems that just life problems that typically characterize what you intersect with? And feel free to say the entire human condition, which most likely is in any
right,
church.
Right, the entire human condition. There are a number of issues, as you can imagine. With a lot of college students, issues of sexual purity are always really big. If anyone's got a silver bullet for pornography, let me know, because, I mean, you just more and more, you just assume – young guys,
that's an issue.
Yeah, that's an issue. And there's no sort of argue. It's just, okay, we got to talk about it. So that's a huge thing. Relationships are always big. Boyfriends, girlfriends, and dating, and premarital counseling, and marital counseling, and, you know, honestly, lots of single people that want to be married and aren't, and single women that are saying, where are all the godly guys? And then when we get into marriage, there's issues of headship and submission and sex. I mean, these are the real things and that happen in pastoral ministry. You know, how, you know, the wife doesn't want to have sex and the husband does, and well, that's a real issue. What does the Bible say about that? And how do you work at that sort of impasse? And then you know, there's some people in our church that have chronic illnesses. There's one lady who's been a real dear member of our church, and she's not very old, and she's had early onset dementia. And so how does the body care for her and value her and work with people like who just have those struggles? And, you know, some of the real heartaches that couples with infertility or have trouble getting pregnant. I mean, all of these things are in our church, and those are just the ones that come to mind.
They pop up, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, one way I've thought about the pornography issue is that I think probably every era, every cultural situation, that there are these typical struggles. You know, if you're in an Islamic country, it's going to be a very different set of typical struggles. If you're in a place with a lot of poverty, it's a different typical struggle. If you're in a culture that's real edgy and angry, different typical struggle. And the those struggles become these doorways in which the brokenness of the human condition is revealed, and the opportunity, you know, to be driven to need the mercy of God and to actually learn how to love, because pornography has such a everything that goes into that is so utterly destructive of love. There's no care for others. It's participating in essentially the victimization and predation of other people. And yet I've known men who, for this issue, realizing that our lives are open before the living God, it has become a doorway through which just massive understanding of the mercy of God. And then out of that, a zeal. And not just for purity, as though the goal is don't do it.
Right.
Purity and holiness have a positive goal of how do I actually start to love people? How do I start to actually care more about other people than view people as in some way or other a means towards self-gratification? I've seen some really, I mean, it's no magic, but it's that hard fight really being joined right at the place where our culture.
Yeah, and I find so often there's just a pervasive hopelessness, you know, guys, and it's not always guys, but, you know, young folks who are saying, I'm just going to deal with this forever, and I've, you know, I've prayed and I've tried for 6 months, nothing changed, and just to feel like this is a lost cause. And that's where we as the church, sometimes the first step in counseling or just gospel friendship is to just get people to hope, just even if you don't believe, let me just tell you, it is possible that you can change, that it might take a long time and it might be two steps forward and one step back and fighting temptation, but it is possible to see some measure of growth and victory in this area. Just on this particular issue, I mean, the most helpful thing to me has been Matthew 5:8, and I just stole all this, I'm sure, from John Piper at some point, but you need to fight pleasure with pleasure. It's not enough to say, well, here's this thing which gives you some momentary satisfaction and just don't do it, but God's promise that blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God, yeah. And to think, yes, this will rob my enjoyment of God, my ability to see and perceive and know God and have communion with God. Mm-hmm. So at that point, it is a fight of faith to believe that this is going to give me more lasting joy, more lasting pleasure and satisfaction to be with God. Yeah. And we don't always think that way as Christians. It's just, well, that's a good thing that God made and he doesn't want to give it to you. No, there's something a lot better. And it's not wrong to be motivated by joy. It's just, as sinful creatures, we have misplaced joy.
Misplaced joys, yeah. Mm. Yeah, one metaphor that I borrowed from Tim Keller is when he talks about how we change, he uses a metaphor of a room and the fact that darkness and evil is both ejected, like there is a fight that says no, that comes against something. So evil is thrown out bodily. But if it's just that, it can take on a kind of a grim tone to it, you know, and so just more willpower will finally do it. The second dynamic that's always there is that evil is squeezed out. There's so much life happening in the room. There's other relationships. There's friendships that really matter. I've known numbers of older men that had struggled, you know, long time struggles with this, where they got involved in doing youth work and working with teenagers. And the motivation of how can I work with integrity with a 17-year-old who's really struggling, if I, as a 37-year-old or a 57-year-old, am completely losing the fight. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those ways where populating the room of one's life with significant relationships that have, you know, that really accomplish something, that are good and helpful, just becomes one of many means of grace in a person's life.
Yeah, that's great. Mm. So when I steal that analogy, should I say I got it from David Paulison, or, you know, just go right to Tim Keller?
Well, you know, Tim Keller would probably say he stole it from the Puritans.
Oh, okay.
So you can probably just say, you know, I think it makes sense biblically that.
Yeah.
Well, we grow both by fighting and by filling our lives with good.
So. What's that old preacher joke? You know, the first time you say, as John Stott says, and then you say, and then eventually say, as I always say. You just say it enough times.
Right. Or to quote Keith Richards, the guitarist for the Rolling Stones, I never played a lick I didn't steal.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes.
Thanks for coming in, guys.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. For more information about CCEF and its resources, visit us on the web at ccef.org.